Thank you, Jeff, for leading us in those songs. Let me invite you to open your Bibles to James chapter 1. A lot of you remember when you were in school, you could either take classes for credit or you could audit those classes. And if you audited a class, that meant you didn't have to turn in your homework, and that meant you didn't have to write your paper, and you didn't have to take the test. In fact, you really didn't even have to come to class as long as you audited the class. But if you took it for credit, you had to do all of the work. Now, I hope that as we're moving through this study of James, that you're not auditing our study. I hope you're taking it for credit. I hope you're doing your homework and you're trying diligently to apply the truths contained in this book into your own lives. Here in James, we're going to look at the topic that we've already pursued in our class time, topic of purity. And I don't know if you see the relationship, but I thought it was interesting how the approach we take to our environment has some direct parallels to the text we're looking at this morning. We're very concerned about our environment, the purity of our environment. Most states have enacted legislation that levies fairly heavy fines for littering, for messing up our environment. We're concerned about the protection of our forests and the elimination of smog, and we care about making products that are biodegradable and about how we dispose of material, especially if it's nuclear waste. And most of us have pitched in. I remember as a boy in the days when you just threw your trash out the window on the highway and nobody much cared about the environment. And we pitched in with our recycling, and most of us recycle cans and newspapers and bottles and whatever. And what seemed like initially an impossible problem in cleaning up our environment has been addressed fairly well in some areas, one person at a time, one family at a time, or one neighborhood or community at a time. Now, environment is important. It's important socially. It's even important religiously. We are stewards of the environment, of the world that God has given us to inhabit. But there's another world I want us to look at today, one that gets just as polluted as our physical environment, and one which it is even more imperative that we keep clean, and that's the inner world of our heart. Here in James chapter 1, the last verse and the last half of that verse in chapter 1, as he's describing what kind of religion God wants us to have, part of it involves keeping ourselves from being polluted by the world. And when we think of purity, we had some good definitions in our classes this morning, but there are some phrases that go with purity that we're all familiar with. We've heard people described, or someone described, as pure as the driven snow, or as pure as the heart of a newborn babe. And there is value in purity. We esteem purity, and we see that in a lot of ways. We value purity in the gold that we may have on our finger. We value purity in the water that we drink. We even value purity in various breeds of cattle or dogs. And so purity is something that carries a high commodity. Webster defines it like this: freedom from what vitiates, weakens, or pollutes. Freedom from moral fault or guilt. And so we look with great admiration upon pure love, the kind of love a mother has for a child, the kind of love that brides and grooms share on their wedding day, and then much later in life on their 50th anniversary, when that love has grown rich and deep, to see that kind of love again. We admire that kind of purity in relationship and love. It's something that is clean. It's something that is innocent. It's something that is right. Paul gives us an idea of what purity means by the grouping in which he places it in his letter to the Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8. He says, finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think on these things. Because purity is essentially a product of the mind, or what the Bible calls the heart, I want us this morning to focus on the role of the mind in maintaining purity. You know, you were born pure. You were innocent as a little baby. But it didn't take long, did it, for this world and all of its pollutants begin to have an effect on our thinking. And then as we moved on up through our teenage years into adulthood, we all have become sinners. We all have become soiled by sin. We've all become impure because of the influence of our environment and our choice to be part of that environment. You know, we care about impurity and other products so much so that we are willing to put filters on a number of things to keep them pure. We will filter our water in order to keep impurities out of it. People who smoke filter their cigarettes to keep some of the more harmful impurities out of their own lungs. We'll filter our coffee. We filter our heating and cooling systems in our homes. And all of these filters have the same purpose. They're designed to keep impurity out of our bodies or our environment. But you know, one thing that we very health-conscious people sometimes don't think about are our minds. What kind of filters do you currently have in place to safeguard your mind from the pollutants of this world, to keep your mind, your heart, unspotted from the world? Did you know that the key to purity is how you deal with your mind? James explains that it starts between your ears. It starts with lust, something that goes on in your mind that leads to sin and that leads ultimately to death. So it all begins with what you allow into your mind. The wise man said, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. And you know, there's a lot that goes on in our world that enters our minds that we don't have a lot of control over. Some we do have control over. I admire those of you who work in environments where you have to listen to trash talk and profane language all day long, because you've got to come home and deprogram your mind. I'm grateful that I don't live and work in an environment like that. But some of you do, and that's a real challenge, a real struggle. And you must work at keeping your mind pure. But you know, when we come into our doors of our homes, we then take charge of what enters our minds. And that involves the conversations we have within our homes, the things that are said, the books that we read, the magazines we look at, the websites we peruse, the music we listen to, the television programming that we choose. All of these things are within the scope of our power to filter the things that come into our minds. 20 years ago, it was said that the average American watched 3 hours of television per day, and that by the time a child that grew up in the average home reached the age of 16, they would have watched 16,000 hours of television. Now, that's probably true today, but you can double that because now you can add the Internet on top of television. The time that's spent in front of a screen being bombarded with one kind of media or another has had a tremendous impact. And we've not yet seen the fruits of what will happen to this Internet generation as they grow older. Anything that consumes as much time and as much attention as television and the Internet can't help but impact significantly, for good or for bad, the way we think. Remember those verses? As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. Remember that passage, what a man sows, that shall he also reap. Those are laws of God that cannot be changed. Proverbs 4:23, Solomon writes, above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life. And I think that's what Jesus was speaking of whenever he said in Matthew chapter 15, verse 19, for out of the heart come evil thoughts, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false testimony, and slander. That's where it originates. That's from which it emanates. Why do you think advertisers on television and on the web spend the millions of dollars that they spend? They know that it affects the way people think. And if you can affect the thinking of an individual, you can affect their buying habits. And what happens is that more than products are sold through television and through the internet, ideas are sold, and values are sold, and morals are sold. You know, I just wonder if this is not one of the greatest areas of struggle among modern Christians. Among those who come to church on Sunday morning and sing, "Pure in heart, help us to be," and then go home and watch another steaming, sexually titillating episode of the latest whatever the fall shows are that are on, shows that you would feel uncomfortable watching if your children were there, or if your parents were there, or if Jesus Christ were there. Do we honestly think that we can expose our minds to such things and remain unaffected? In the hills of West Virginia, for generations, men have gone underground to take out the deposits of coal. And the young men who go down into those mines go down into those mines with pure lungs. But as they breathe that air with all the coal dust, those deposits, those microscopic deposits begin to lodge themselves firmly within the tissues of their lungs. And over a period of years, that buildup slowly increases until finally the breathing capacity is diminished to the point that the person will ultimately lose their life to a disease called black lung. And I just wonder if we could take a spiritual biopsy of our minds, if we wouldn't see the same kind of pollutant building up within the hearts of the Christians right here in this place, to the point that the same kind of fatal disease will destroy us spiritually. Can we repeatedly expose ourselves to such impurity and remain unaffected? I don't think so. You know, our purity is determined in large part by the input and the output, the old garbage in, garbage out. And I would expect, in fact, I would believe that if you are struggling with language, if you have a propensity to use words that you ought not to use, if you are struggling with impure thoughts, if you're struggling sexually, I would venture to say that there is a very direct connection to what you're allowing in the way of input into your mind. You see, it's not enough to put a filter on the source of impure thoughts. We must also provide a positive input. Yes, eliminate the bad, but begin to bring in the good. In Matthew chapter 12, Jesus talked about the power of Satan in the life of an individual and how, you know, if you eliminate those evil influences from your life, you must also bring in the positive. And he says there in Matthew chapter 12, beginning in verse 43, "When an evil spirit comes out of a man, it goes through arid places seeking rest and does not find it. Then it says, 'I will return to the house I left.' And when it arrives, it finds the house unoccupied, swept clean, and put in order. Then it goes and takes with it seven other spirits more wicked than itself. And they go in and live there. And the final condition of that man is worse than the first." That is how it will be with this wicked generation. Yes, eliminate the evil influences in your life. Put some filters in place to guard your purity level. But then you've got to do something. You've got to fill it with the good. Nobody's life remains a vacuum. The heart and the mind cannot remain a vacuum. If it's not filled with good, more evil will rush back in to take the place of that which you've eliminated. In Psalm chapter 1, where it talks about the blessed man, it talks about the danger of walking and standing and sitting with sinners. And it's not enough just to eliminate that evil influence. He must also delight in the law of God and meditate on the things of God. The negative must be replaced with the positive to have any long-term effect. We have tried to make James, and we're going to continue to try to make James, absolutely practical for us in our study this time through. And so I want to leave you with some very practical suggestions on trying to maintain and grow in purity in your life. And let me say this, first of all, to the husbands, to the ones who are spiritual leaders in their families. And you husbands, listen up, especially if you've got children at home. You men need to step up to the plate and take responsibility for setting some standards in your home as to what will be allowed and what will not be allowed. And your children, members of your family, need to know clearly where you stand. And you need to be able to say, like Joshua did of old, "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." And when those standards are violated, whether you're sitting in front of a television set or whatever it is, don't just sit there and feel embarrassed and wait for the moment to pass. Get up and change the station or turn it off and say, "We're not going to do that in our family. It's too dangerous. There's too much at risk." And set some standards within your family. Secondly, all of us need to maintain a personal standard of purity. We need to resolve to be single-minded in this area. Get on one side of the fence or the other. You can't come to church and sing the songs to Jehovah God and then go out and fill your mind with impurity. It doesn't work that way. That's a charade. That's hypocrisy. Be single-minded, not double-minded in this area. Thirdly, begin each day with prayer. We live in probably the most dangerous time in the history of the world. We have access to impurity instantly. Begin your day with prayer. And there's no better prayer I know of in the Bible than the one that David prayed. A man whose mind wandered and who ended up being involved in sexual immorality and murder. And David came to his senses and he began to pray this prayer. And it's recorded in Psalms chapter 51, verse 10. "Create in me a pure heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me." Take that prayer up on your bathroom mirror if you have to. Pray that prayer and ask God daily for strength in having a pure heart. Fourthly, have a regular time each day when you can feed on the positive input of God's Word. Spend some devotional time. Spend time in the Word, in prayer. Fill up that void in your life with things that will nourish you and feed you and help you to be healthy in your thought processes. And let me just say, we are dealing with the tip of the iceberg. We're beginning to see with all this issue of the internet and with pornography. And parents, you are doing your teenage children no favor if you allow them to have access to the internet behind closed doors in their bedroom or wherever. If you have a computer, keep it out on an open space where there is accountability. It is terribly, terribly dangerous. And Satan is destroying lives daily using this particular tool. You know, some people equate purity with naivety. But Jesus was the purest man who ever lived on the face of this earth, and he was anything but naive. And Jesus is the one who said, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." Well, here in James chapter 1, he says there in verse 22, where Adam read at the beginning, "Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says." Now, you've done good today because you got up and you came to church. And you have, many of you have come to Bible class. And you sang the songs and you took communion and you put your money in the plate and you'll go home. But you know what the blessing that's recorded here? Who that's reserved for? You see, it's not enough just to come to church. It's not enough just to hear the Bible class teacher. It's not enough just to hear the preacher preach the sermon. That can all be done, and nothing of value can be accomplished. Look what he says at the end of verse 25. "He will be blessed in what he does." The blessing is for those who do it. The blessing is for those who respond. The blessing is only for those who are obedient to the Word. You can sit and listen to it every day for the rest of your life, but until you personally respond to what God has asked of you, there is no blessing. You've heard today God's will, both in our classes and now in this sermon, in the area of Christian purity. The ball is in your court. What are you going to do about it? I hope today when you walk out those doors that you will resolve to put filters in place, to do whatever you need to do to keep your mind pure from being unspotted in this wicked world in which we live. You know, the wonderful thing is that God can and will create in each of us a pure heart. I don't care how polluted your heart is. I don't care what you've exposed yourselves to, however lethal that exposure may be. God can cleanse, can recreate, and can renew if you'll allow Him to do that. If this morning you need to respond, we'll pray for you. If you need to respond in faith and obedience to Jesus Christ, we'll rejoice as you're baptized. If you need to respond, we encourage you to do that right now while we stand and while we sing.